Rise Morning Show.
It is Wednesday, 16th of January. Let's begin together in prayer in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. For you we long, O Lord. You are the spring of life-giving water. Refresh those who grow weary in their search for you. You are the bread from heaven. Feed those who hunger for your love. You are the source of the Spirit of God's love. Pour your love into our hearts that we may love one another. You are the life of all the living. Bring to the joy of everlasting life all those who have died. God our Father, you feed your people with the finest wheat and give us water to drink from the rock who is Christ. Sustain all those who hunger and thirst for you without knowing it, through the same Christ our Lord. And all glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen. It is a better way to start a Wednesday morning. The Sunrise Morning Show on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matt Swaim. Anna Mitchell's got news. Paul Lockman's pushing buttons. And as usual, we have some great people on this morning to help you get going. Mike Aquilino will be along from fathersofthechurch.com. He's got a new book called Villains of the Early Church, and today we're going to talk about one of the biggest and baddest in the early church, namely the Emperor Diocletian, one of the major persecutors of Christians. Mike will tell us more about him. Dr. John Bergsman will tell us more about the story of the Psalms. He is the author of Psalm Basics for Catholics. Gary Zimak will share St. Peter's advice to those who worry. And Kristen Hawkins from Students for Life of America will share information and analysis of a new poll they've done on millennial attitudes toward abortion. So, hope you can stay with us. It is 2 minutes past the hour. Here's Anna Mitchell with news.
Good morning. Thousands of federal employees will have to keep working without pay. A federal judge in Washington, D.C. is denying a request requiring the government to pay air traffic controllers who are currently working for free during the government shutdown. The district judge said he had no doubt workers are feeling hardship, but said allowing employees deemed essential to not come to work would create chaos and confusion. He set a schedule for more hearings, giving federal employees another chance to argue their case. Attorney General nominee William Barr has said he does not believe the special counsel Robert Mueller investigation is a witch hunt.
I believe it is in the best interest of everyone, the president, Congress, and the American people, that this matter be resolved by allowing the special counsel to complete his work.
During his Senate confirmation hearing, Barr said Mueller should not be fired without cause. President Trump often refers to Mueller's Russia investigation as a witch hunt. Barr said the U.S. needs a credible resolution of issues related to Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Barr also played down a memo he wrote that was critical of the Russia investigation. He said President Trump sought no promises or commitments from him before his nomination. He says that the U.S. needs a credible resolution. British Prime Minister Theresa May faces a no-confidence vote in Parliament today, the day after her plan for Brexit was soundly defeated. NBC's Bill Neely has more.
Well, a huge defeat here for the British government and for Theresa May's deal, negotiated over 2.5 years for Britain to leave the European Union. It was expected that she would lose this vote, but the scale of her defeat is historic. She will face a vote of no confidence in her government, but she won't resign. She will talk to other parties. She will try to win compromises from European Union leaders.
If May wins the vote, she'll have to come up with another plan for the UK to leave the European Union, a move approved by a narrow margin of voters 2 years ago. She won't have much time either. The deadline to leave the EU is March 29th. If she loses, Parliament will have just 2 weeks to try to form a new government. May could try to hold on by reorganizing her government, or she could step down and let another member of her party try to take the spot. The Northeast province of the Society of Jesus has released its list of Jesuits credibly accused of sexual abuse of minors dating back to the 1950s. There are 50 Jesuits listed. All but 14 have died, and none is currently in active ministry. The document notes that any Jesuits with allegations currently under investigation were not included in the list. As of today, all U.S. provinces of the Society of Jesus have now released their lists of credibly accused. Pope Francis yesterday sent a message to the Pontifical Academy for Life, celebrating its 25th anniversary of its foundation. Vatican News reports the Holy Father called on its members to promote human fraternity and humanism of life. He said, quote, "We need to enter into the language of men and women today, making the gospel message incarnate in their concrete experience," end quote. And Gillette is facing some backlash for their new commercial calling out, quote, toxic masculinity. The razor brand released the ad, which encourages men to hold one another accountable while questioning the values of bullying, sexual harassment, and toxic male behavior this week. The company said the ad is their way of acknowledging how their brand influences culture. Some critics, including Piers Morgan, said the commercial was too political and painted all men as, quote, being bad.
Twitter lost their brains over this yesterday.
Did they?
Yeah.
I did not. I was not following this on Twitter.
I have not seen the whole ad. I saw like maybe a clip or two of like, you know, a supposed gangster rap video in there, and like some people like bullying a kid or whatever. I did not see the whole thing, so I have. I don't have the time and energy to get sucked into these Twitter, you know, hate fest.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you and I just heard from Catholic counselor Kevin Prendergast. You know, he joins us on Thursday mornings, and he wants to talk about toxic masculinity next
week. We talk about toxic masculinity on this show all the time.
Well, apparently this stems from something that was in a pretty reputable publication. Was it like
there've been some new studies out, and those have caused their own sets of controversy, but we talk about, theology of the body, responsible fatherhood.
Oh, definitely.
You know, all kinds of things related to Catholic manhood, where we roundly renounce, you know, toxic forms of masculinity, you know.
Or toxic forms of femininity. I mean,
or toxic forms of femininity, or toxic forms of any types of humanity.
Indeed.
But
we're against
toxicity. Also are not selling millions of dollars of razors each year, so.
Yeah, that's true.
We're in a different kind of spotlight.
Millions of dollars of coffee mugs, though.
Just we also kidding. Don't contribute really to any not. Political campaigns, yeah. So there's that, too. I don't know. Twitter just needs to take a chill pill.
I think that's pretty much
Does
the
Gillette
case
have a line of chill pills?
Day.
I don't know.
Love it.
Everybody needs to just take a deep breath and calm down. Anger makes you stop thinking normally. It's 8 minutes past the hour. From fathersofthechurch.com, we're joined by Mike Aquilina, who's got a new book out on the villains of the early church. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Matt.
You know, when I first was on my way into the Catholic Church back in the early 2000s, one of the things I wanted to do was learn as much about the saints as I could. So I started looking at the calendar of saints, and, you know, there's a lot of saints on each day of the calendar, so I'd start looking up all of them. And if I had a nickel for everyone that their entire bio line was martyred in the persecutions of the Emperor Diocletian, no other information has survived. I mean, that is the bio of a lot of saints.
Because it's true. Diocletian's was the last and greatest of the Roman persecutions. Historians call it a Holocaust because it was that kind of sacrifice. So many Christians laid down their lives. And Diocletian was building on the methods that had been established by Dacius in the middle of the 3rd century, and he was perfecting them. You know, he had better technology at his disposal, and he was a master administrator. So if anybody's going to administer a machine of persecution, it would be Diocletian, and he did. So many of the Christians went down in that persecution. One of the things that left them vulnerable is that it had been so long since the church had endured an intense persecution. So Christians had grown kind of lax in their discipline, and they had grown weaker in their ability to resist this kind of thing. They got used to a comfortable life, and once that comfortable life was threatened, they gave in kind of easily. It's a very interesting phenomenon that in the time when we had so many martyrs, as you describe, we also had so many apostates, so many people who were willing to give up the faith. And that's a sad reality, and I suspect it's always going to be a phenomenon that we face in times of persecution.
Well, with all that, of course, there are ways that the church kind of settled what in the world went on once Diocletian had gone on, because we're not far from the legalization of Christianity, and we're not far from the Council of Nicaea in the era of Diocletian. But let's talk about Diocletian himself. Was this persecution of Christians because he hated them deeply personally? Was it because they were extremely inconvenient to him? Or was it more because he was trying to run an empire and those were the eggs he had to break to make an omelet?
I think it's the last thing you said there. He wasn't a particularly religious man, according to the old, you know, traditional Roman religion. He was steady, and he kind of kept the customs. But he wasn't known, like some of the emperors, as a particularly pious man, according to the pagan standards. He wasn't really interested in religion as much as others were. He did have your standard soothsayers who were in his court, and it was up to them to kind of read the entrails of the animal and tell him what to do. In one of these meetings of the court, they did poke at the entrails, and they said that the Christians were responsible for the troubles that he was facing. What troubles were they? Well, the Roman Empire had grown so large. It was the entire known world, almost. It had grown so large that it was unmanageable. And Diocletian came up with the scheme to divide the empire into two. Each side would be managed by two men, and there would be an orderly plan of succession. He wanted to stop the constant stream of rebellions that took place, where the military would present a new emperor and then fight to get him established on the throne. Well, he came up with the scheme to do that. Why wasn't it working as smoothly as he wanted? Well, they said, it's because of the Christians. The Christians were not in line with your plan of emperor worship that was going to make this all possible. It just wasn't happening because the Christians were introducing their superstition into the mix. So he grudgingly went forward with the persecution. But, you know, he never did anything by half measures, and he never wanted to do anything badly. So when he did persecution, he did it like a virtuoso.
And there are so many Christians martyred under his reign, many of them on the church calendar. I mean, who are some of the names maybe from that era who would have either been martyred by Diocletian or would have had to live and survive through that persecution?
Well, one of them is St. Aquilina, who bears my name, and she was in Byblos, Lebanon. She was a young girl, and she was denounced for converting some of her classmates to Christianity, and she was executed. A similar case was St. Agnes of Rome, who was another young girl who was executed because she refused to give up her vow of virginity. She had wanted to become a consecrated virgin, and so she was executed for it very publicly. St. Menas in Egypt was another one executed during the reign of Diocletian, and Menas was a soldier, and he was executed. His body was taken to a shrine in Egypt, where that shrine remains today with its healing waters. There are so many, and as you point out, we know just a little bit about some of them, only their name, but their names were preserved because the Christian community was so well established at that time and could keep good records that way. Diocletian failed because by then Christianity was everywhere, and Christians made up a majority or a plurality of the people in many of the cities of the empire, the major cities of the empire. So he just didn't succeed at what he set out to do, and as he went into his declining years, he just looked at everything around him, and he saw that he had been a failure, and that his whole scheme for preserving the empire had actually just made it fall apart, and he committed suicide in the end. Christians saw this as almost inevitable, according to his principles, that he would come to this and that he would end this way.
Well, he failed in another way, Mike, in that he died in the year 311, and 2 years later, the Edict of Milan, which legalized Christianity in the empire, happened. And, you know, just about 12 years later than that, we've got the Council of Nicaea, where the emperors are involved in helping the church articulate her creeds. I mean, That's a pretty big turnaround.
Yes, and there are a couple of good reasons for that. One, the blood of the martyrs is seed. It was in the 100s, at the end of the 100s, that Tertullian said that. It's something that's just part and parcel of Christianity. We can observe that dynamic through history, that when we see the courage of the martyrs, it rouses the church to a similar courage, a similar momentum. Really, that going forward in spite of difficulty, and that's exactly what happened. The other thing is that Constantine, who was the successor to Diocletian in many ways, Constantine was not a stupid man, and he realized that the empire was expending a lot of energy, a lot of resource, and a lot of money to try to crush Christianity, and the more they tried to crush it, the more they fueled its success. So, I mean, there may have been that dimension to Constantine's decision to legalize Christianity, that he realized this was futile. And in order to go forward, we need to harness the energy of Christianity rather than crush it.
Diocletian, one of the many figures profiled in Mike Aquilina's new book on the villains of the early church. If our listeners want to connect with you, Mike, where do they go?
Fathersofthechurch.com.
Linked at sunrisemorningshow.com as we check on weather for the nation. Low pressure skirting across eastern Canada will bring a few lake effect snow showers to the Great Lakes and interior northeast. Quiet skies for the middle portions of the country. The northern plains and upper Mississippi Valley will only reach into the teens and 20s with single digits across the northernmost tier. The mid-Atlantic will see 30s and 40s to the north with warmer 50s across the Carolinas. The Gulf Coast and southeast will reach into the low to mid-60s with warmer 70s across South Florida. Further south across Texas, a few rain showers possible as moisture streams up from the Gulf. And the western U.S. is going to have another day of rain and snow in the works. The rain, heavy at times, will move into California and the Pacific Northwest, with snow falling in the higher elevations across the Sierra and Great Basin. That snow will also spread into the central and northern Rockies. Got headlines next with Anna Mitchell on the Sunrise Morning Show on EWTN. It's 17 past.
Catholic Singles is proud to support the Sunrise Morning Show. If you're looking for someone who shares your faith and values, Catholic Singles is a great resource for bringing single Catholics together. Like Matt and Christine, who married a little over a year ago and have happily welcomed their first child. Founded by a Catholic single like yourself, Catholic Singles is committed to your needs as a Catholic by matching you with authentic Catholic principles, resources, and modern dating technologies. Let Catholic Singles help you find the perfect match on the web at catholicsingles.com/sunrise.
Central Fabricators is proud to support the Sunrise Morning Show and encourages other Catholic business owners to do the same. Central Fabricators knows that the Sunrise Morning Show is where you'll get news from a Catholic perspective while keeping you up to date on what's happening in the Vatican as well. It's also a great way to keep in touch with the Catholic faith throughout the week. Central Fabricators, based in Cincinnati, Ohio, has been in business for more than 60 years. On the web at centralfabricators.com. That's centralfabricators.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-25-SHARE. That's 855-25-SHARE. 855-25-SHARE.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
Look, Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
19 minutes past the hour. Here's Anna Mitchell with headlines.
A federal judge is denying a request to require the government to pay air traffic controllers who are working for free during the government shutdown. The Northeast Province of the Society of Jesus yesterday released its list of Jesuits credibly accused of sexual abuse dating back to the 1950s. And the Archbishop of Baltimore has laid out new plans to create more accountability among local church leadership.
All right. Full newscast coming up at half past the hour. And Anna Mitchell on these mornings where we're heading toward Lent before a lot of people give up coffee. We want to encourage people to go to sunrisemorningshow.com if they need a boost in the mornings and get Mystic Monk Coffee through our site.
Yes.
When you do so, you help the monks of Wyoming, the Carmelites. You help yourself, and you help the Sunrise Morning Show a little bit. We've benefited from that, not in gigantic checks, but in enough to make it worthwhile.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I had a bag of Snickering Monk candy bar Mystic Monk Coffee over the Christmas season. Delicious.
Check it out. Click the Mystic Monk link at sunrisemorningshow.com. It's 21 past.
I'm Father Rob Jack. Join me this afternoon for Driving Home the Faith, when Faye Roche of the Covington Pro-Life Office will get us ready for the March for Life. Skip Tate updates us on St. Vincent de Paul in Cincinnati. I'll reflect on the writings of St. Paul, plus news, traffic, and weather to get you home safely. That's this afternoon beginning at 4 on Sacred Heart Radio.
You're on the road to Christ the King. Driving home the faith.
Sacred Heart Radio family, if you received a new credit card to start the new year, that means your old credit card has expired, as has your automatic monthly donation to Sacred Heart Radio. Now, those automatic monthly gifts help us to budget for operating expenses and equipment replacements. So if you have a new credit card and want to resume giving monthly, please visit sacredheartradio.com and click donate or call 513-731-7740. We'll also send you a reminder in the mail. So please renew today at sacredheartradio.com, and thank you. Did you know you can support Sacred Heart Radio by using the Amazon link at sacredheartradio.com? Just go to the new sacredheartradio.com page down and click on the Amazon link before you shop. To get what you need and give to us, click the Amazon link at sacredheartradio.com.
Bros Art Pharmacy, a proud supporter of Sacred Heart Radio, has a brand new website and app with specials, healthcare articles, and the ability to have prescriptions transferred to Bros Art Pharmacy, all on their new website or app at brosartpharmacy.com.
This is Father Benedict Okinsler from Mount St. Mary Seminary in Cincinnati for Sacred Heart Catholic Radio. And I would like to read a prayer from St. Ignatius Loyola. Dearest Lord, teach me to be generous. Teach me to serve you as you deserve, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to labor and not to seek to rest, to give of myself and not to ask for reward, except the reward of knowing that I am doing your will. Amen.
Dr. John Bergsma is back with us on the Sunrise Morning Show. We've been going through his book, Psalm Basics for Catholics, Seeing Salvation History in a New Way. Good morning, Doc.
Hey, good morning, Anna.
So we're going to start diving into the story that the Psalms tell. And there are 150 Psalms in the Bible. They're broken up into five books. And I want to go through each of these books just a little bit today. So let's jump right in. What is the main theme of the first book of the Psalms?
Well, book one, which goes from Psalm 1 to Psalm 41, is the place in the Psalms where you find the most lament, and not just laments, but what we call laments of the individual, which means, you know, there's one person, he's going through a tough time, and he's crying out to God. Usually that person is David. So that's kind of the mood. Book one is a lamenting, kind of sorrowful book of Psalms, with a couple of exceptions, but mostly David is under duress for that whole time period of that book.
Now, does the tone change once we get to book two of the Psalms?
It does. Once you get into book two, you get far fewer laments and a lot more psalms that reflect the glory of David's reign, the strength of his capital, Zion, another name for Jerusalem. Get the royal wedding psalm, very beautiful, reflecting the glory of his court in Psalm 45. And book two ends with a description of Solomon's reign, where everything went right. You know, it was a golden age for Israel in Psalm 72. So, yes, you kind of rise to visions of the glory of David's kingdom in Book 2.
And just for those following along, that covers Psalms 42 to 72. So if we reach this high point at the end of the second book, Doc, then is it fair to assume that things go downhill in Book 3?
That's usually how it works in the Bible. You know, you move right into Psalm 73 and the mood changes immediately. And there's a sense of distress as the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer. And then in Book 3, we get a concentration of national laments where the whole country is in serious trouble. And the book ends with the two, you know, arguably the two most depressing psalms, Psalm 88, which ends with, you know, not a single hint of hope. There's no little line like, yet in the morning I will praise the Lord, his mercies will be renewed, or something like that. Most psalms have at least an obligatory verse like that at the end, and 88 just ends with your friends being the darkness and full stop. That's it. Yeah, it's pretty dark. And then Psalm 89 in some ways seems almost worse, because it ends with the son of David being dragged off in chains into exile and the kingdom collapsed and the enemies of God mocking the king. And so that's also pretty hard to take.
Yeah, good grief. So let's move into Book 4. What is the mood then there?
Well, if Book 3 kind of reflects the downfall of David's kingdom and then ultimately the exile, which we know took place to Babylon, you know, the king was taken off to Babylon, then Book 4 represents that period that we call the Babylonian exile, where the people of Israel are in a foreign country and kind of reflecting on where did they go wrong. So Book 4 can be melancholy at times. It's often reflective, and it ends with two psalms that kind of look back on Israel's history and come to the conclusion that God was faithful, but Israel wasn't. And then finally, a prayer for God to bring the people back from exile.
And this covers Psalms 90 through 106, and you've got a handy little chart in your book that shows me that Book 4 is the shortest in terms of length. So what happens that we transition so quickly to Book 5?
Well, Book 5 appears to represent the return from exile, because the first psalm in Book 5 gives thanks to God for bringing the people back from all the places where they've been scattered, which kind of corresponds to the end of Psalm 106, which prayed for God to do just that. So it seems like at the beginning of 5, God is answering this prayer to bring the people back, and then you have a more joyful mood through this book. The centerpiece of Book 5 is these 15 beautiful psalms of ascent, which are pilgrimage psalms when you're hiking up the hills to go to Jerusalem to worship at the temple. And then Book 5 ends with kind of a symphony of praise with Psalms 146 through 150, five psalms in a row, each of which begins with Hallelujah, which is Hebrew for praise the Lord, and just end with this really jubilant mood as you're praising God in the temple. So there's a real upswing in Book 5, no doubt.
So if we think of this as sort of a series of hills, which you illustrate in the book, which, as I say often, is the illustrations are really a good reason to purchase this book alone. So let's go through this. We start low, and there's sort of this trek up, this climb up to the high point. Then you come crashing down, flatten out a little bit, only to trek back up. Now, if we're visualizing that in our minds or following along in your pictures, how does this give us a basic summary of the Davidic kingdom?
Well, it kind of represents the ebb and flow of what happened to David and his kingdom. You know, it started off with David being anointed by Samuel, but Saul was in charge. And so for the early part of David's career, he was this suffering anointed one who was just always running from Saul and other enemies. But then eventually the kingdom came to him, and he strengthened the kingdom, and Jerusalem became powerful. And by the end of his life, he was able to pass the scepter to his son Solomon, and they experienced that golden age. But then after Solomon, things fell apart, and the kingdom entered into decline, ultimately into exile. And that kind of, as I said, represents book four, where they're kind of in exile, thinking, where did we go wrong? You know, how do we get back to a right position with God and get restored in this situation? And then in book five, God restores them, you know, brings them back to Judah, and they're able to rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild the temple. But one thing that's missing from book five is that the Son of David does not come back yet. And so the Psalms really end with a forward look for the return of the Son of David. In other words, they look forward to Christ. And that's how the apostles understood the Psalms. And that's why the apostles quote the Psalms more than any other Old Testament book in the New Testament, because they saw these beautiful poems as anticipations of the coming of Jesus.
Very cool. We'll leave that there for now. Thank you, Dr. John Bergsma. The book is Psalm Basics for Catholics, and it's linked at sunrisemorningshow.com. Half past the hour now. It's time for news. A federal judge is denying a request to require the government to pay air traffic controllers who are working for free during the government shutdown. D.C. Judge Richard Leon denied the National Air Traffic Controllers Association's request for a temporary restraining order yesterday. Leon did, however, set a schedule for more hearings, giving federal employees another chance to argue their case. During his Senate confirmation hearing yesterday, Attorney General nominee William Barr said he does not believe Special Counsel Robert Mueller is involved in a witch hunt.
I believe it is in the best interest of everyone, the President, Congress, and the American people, that this matter be resolved by allowing the Special Counsel to complete his work.
Barr said Mueller should not be fired without cause and played down a memo he wrote that was critical of the Russia investigation. Barr said President Trump sought no promises or commitments from him before his nomination. He said the U.S. needs a credible resolution of issues related to Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election.
I will not permit partisan politics, personal interests, or any other improper consideration to interfere with this or any other investigation.
Barr said his allegiance is to the rule of law. The Archbishop of Baltimore is laying out new plans to address the sexual abuse crisis. Yesterday, Archbishop William Laurie outlined steps the Archdiocese is taking to create more accountability among local church leadership. The plan includes updates to its child protection policies, a mandate requiring bishops to sign a code of conduct, and a third-party system for reporting allegations against bishops. The plans come several months after the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, at the request of the Vatican, did not vote as originally planned on similar steps to address the bishop accountability issue. The Northeast Province of the Society of Jesus has released its list of Jesuits credibly accused of sexual abuse of a minor dating back to the 1950s. There are 50 Jesuits listed, and all but 14 have died. None is currently in active ministry. Pope Francis has urged Asian pastors to foster cooperation and unity of faith on their continent. From Vatican Radio, Linda Bordoni reports.
In a message to participants in a meeting of the presidents of doctrinal commissions of the Episcopal Conferences of Asia, the Pope asked them to reaffirm their common responsibility in promoting the unity and integrity of the Catholic faith in their continent. Asia, Pope Francis said, is such a vast continent marked by religious, linguistic and cultural diversity that the pastors of its church have many challenges to face. The Pope had words of encouragement as they worked to reaffirm their common responsibility for the unity and integrity of the Catholic faith. He encouraged them to explore new means and methods of bearing witness to the gospel amid the challenges of our contemporary world, and recalled his apostolic exhortation Evangelii Gaudium, in which he invited the whole church to go forth. The Pope noted with pleasure that the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith is actively supporting the important work of the Episcopal Conferences, and especially of their doctrinal commissions, as they assist and foster the effective and fraternal cooperation among the pastors of the Church in Asia. He concluded by assuring them of his prayers for the meeting, that it may offer an opportunity to address the concerns of the Gospel that are specific and relevant to Asia. I'm Linda Bordoni.
British Prime Minister Theresa May faces a no-confidence vote in Parliament today, the day after her plan for Brexit was overwhelmingly defeated. If May wins the vote, she'll have to come up with another plan for the UK to leave the European Union, a move that voters approved in 2016. Parliament will have just 2 weeks to try and form a new government if she loses. That's the news on the Sunrise Morning Show. It's now 35 minutes past the hour.
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from Schneller Heating, Air, and Plumbing and owner Chris Knockelman. For heating, air conditioning, water heaters, plumbing, and more, Schneller has been treating customers with integrity for over 87 years. On the web at schnellerair.com.
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from Kelsey Chevrolet, Cincinnati's fastest-growing franchise dealer, because your family believes in ours. Online at kelseychev.com.
We are Kelsey Chevrolet, from all family to yours.
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from American Board Certified Orthodontist Dr. David Quast. Dr. David Quast's goal is to create not only beautiful smiles, but also great-looking faces. Dr. Quast combines the latest in digital technologies with a unique diagnostic approach that focuses on the harmonious alignment of the face, teeth, and jaws. Whether it's fixed braces, Invisalign, adults, or children, it's Quast Orthodontics in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. For a complimentary exam, 859-341-9400 or QuastOrthodontics.com to see beautiful smiles and faces.
It's 24 minutes before the hour on this Wednesday, January the 16th, and your forecast is brought to you on Sacred Heart Catholic Radio by SchnellerAir.com. A winter weather advisory has been put in place for counties north of 275 until 9 this morning because of the possibility of ice glazing the roads, so be careful. Right now, temperatures in the lower 30s as you're heading out the door. For Cincinnati, some isolated morning freezing drizzle, otherwise mostly cloudy today with a high of 35. Mostly cloudy tonight, slight chance for a late wintry mix and an overnight low of 32. Early chance of snow and freezing rain tomorrow. They'll turn to showers with a high of 40 degrees. For the Miami Valley-Dayton area, cloudy skies today. A few flurries or freezing drizzle possible with a high of 35. Cloudy tonight with an overnight low of 26. Periods of snow becoming mixed or changing to freezing rain. A high of 35 degrees. This is Sacred Heart Catholic Radio.
It is the Sunrise Morning Show. Thank you for being with us on a Wednesday morning, 16th of January. And this Friday for the March for Life, if you are listening to the Sunrise Morning Show around the country but are going to be in D.C. for the march, be sure to tune in starting at 6 a.m. Eastern to catch our live coverage of people descending upon the march by tuning in to our affiliate in the Washington, D.C. area, 1160 a.m. Guadalupe Radio. We'd love to still help you get up in the morning and get you ready to march. Gary Zimak now with us from followingthetruth.com from the Philadelphia area. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Matt.
So I was looking at Amazon. It looks like Give Up Worry for Lent is almost out.
It is. It is. I think it's going to be coming out any day now, and it can be pre-ordered. And sales are good so far, so I'm really excited about it.
That's because we're all tired of worrying, Gary. We need some help on this.
I know. And what a perfect time to give up worrying during the Lenten season. And by the way, Matt, I want to mention, too, that during Lent, we are going to be changing the name of this segment that we do to Give Up Worry for Lent. So I'm excited about that. So we can all do this together.
All right. I'm all in, Gary. Today we're looking at a verse from 1 Peter chapter 5. And we've discussed this verse before, but there's just so much in it. What's St. Peter saying to us about worry?
Yeah, Matt, we're going to 1 Peter 5:7, one of my favorite verses. Cast all your anxieties on him, for he cares about you. Matt, there's a few things about this verse that really struck me, and they continue to strike me, even though it's simple, even though it's a pretty familiar verse in the Bible. St. Peter's telling us to cast all, not some of our anxieties, cast all of our anxieties on the Lord. Give them to him. Why? Because he cares about me. And I think that sometimes that when I begin to worry, when I begin to worry about the problems of my life, I feel very alone. I feel that, well, I'm the only person. I've got to handle this. That's why I worry so much. And I forget just how much the Lord cares about me. And then even if I think about, well, maybe I should pray about this, then I think, well, I don't want to bother him. He's got too many other things to worry about. And he doesn't care about my insignificant problems. But that's not what the verse says. The verse says he cares about me, and he wants me to cast not some, but all of my anxieties on him.
Yeah, all of them. And I think I've mentioned to you before that in the translation I grew up memorizing, instead of anxieties, it said cares. So literally it said, cast all your cares on him, for he cares about you. That kind of sort of drives home the point that Jesus cares about what we care about. That's something that it's easy for us to, you know, think in a detached way that Jesus is above all of this and is not really worried about it. And he thinks all of our struggles are dumb and that we just forget about all of them and just, you know, live in perfect bliss. But no, he cares. I mean, when Jesus is in the garden, he's praying and moved deeply with pain and concern for the cares of his people, for the damage that sin causes, for the stresses that the world puts upon humans. I mean, he cares about what we care about.
Exactly, and there's no problem that's too small to cast on him. You know, even if you're driving to an appointment and you're worried about getting a parking spot, pray for it. Say, Lord, please help me find a parking spot. The little things we worry about sometimes, the problems around our house, the plumbing issues, the heating issues, whatever it is, we begin to panic about these things and we forget that he cares about it. If we're worried about it, he wants us to be at peace. So he wants us to care. He wants us to tell him, and he wants us to ask for help. And Matt, there's another point I want to make about this verse. The very next verse. Now, we're talking about the fact that the Lord's got his eye on us. He cares about us. He cares about our problems. He wants to help us. The very next verse after this one reminds us, it's 1 Peter 5:8. St. Peter says this, "Be sober, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." You know, Matt, Satan's got his eye on us too. And what he wants to do, unlike Jesus, he wants to feed into that worry and make us feel that, yeah, this problem is hopeless. This will never get fixed. There's no one to help you. You should worry. So we got to be careful, because if we don't cast our burdens on the Lord, if we don't turn to him with our concerns, the devil is going to be in our ear saying, come on, this is never going to work out. And then we're going to really be in trouble.
And I think it's good to keep in mind the source here, too. I mean, Peter is a guy who let his worry and concern and his desire to control mess up things a lot over the course of his life, even just the little part of his life that we see in the scriptures. I mean, here's a guy that when the Lord was going to his suffering, he wanted to jump in and stop it, cut off a guy's ear, right, to try and stop God's will, because he wanted to control things so badly. A guy who, you know, hours later pretended like he'd never heard of Jesus or didn't know him. I mean, this is a guy who is in such a state of self-preservation, in such a state of control, and that kind of thing feeds from worry and anxiety.
Absolutely. And the cool thing about Peter, too, and you make a really good point, is Peter's the guy that got out of the boat and walked to Jesus on the water, too. So in spite of all of Peter's weaknesses, He had this ability to constantly to straighten himself out and get back focused on the Lord. Now, he certainly was known to panic, but he gives us that reminder that if we stick close to Jesus, if we in the midst of the storm, if we focus on the Lord, if we turn to him, then we're going to be able to get things straightened out and our lives will be filled with peace.
All right, Gary Zimak, if our listeners want to connect with you, perhaps to find out more about where they can hear you speak, or maybe get more information about giving up worry for Lent, how do we get in touch?
Best place, Matt, is my website, followingthetruth.com.
Linked, of course, at sunrisemorningshow.com. Thank you so much, my friend, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, Matt. God bless you, friend.
All right. It is 43 minutes past the hour, and up next on the Sunrise Morning Show, we're going to welcome Kristen Hawkins from Students for Life of America to discuss a new poll from Students for Life on millennials and attitudes toward abortion. Stay with us. Back after this.
I'm Matt Swain, grateful that Visiting Angels underwrites the Sunrise Morning Show. People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home rather than a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. And services are provided up to 24 hours per day with caregiver selection before service begins. Visiting Angels. Online at visitingangels.com. That's visitingangels.com.
Support for the Sunrise Morning Show is from J.J. White Incorporated, the single-source multi-trade contractor for your next construction project. Since 1920, J.J. White Incorporated has been constructing with knowledge and providing service with integrity and safety. From heavy industrial to commercial projects, J.J. White does it all. With offices in Philadelphia, South Bend, Whiting, Newcastle, and Boston, you can count on excellent construction service and quality. J.J. White Incorporated, 215-722-1000, and online at jjwhiteinc.com.
Did you happen to receive any gift cards in your Christmas stocking this year? If you'll be spending a gift from Amazon, please remember to click our Amazon link at sunrisemorningshow.com before you start shopping. That's because a portion of the purchase price comes back to the show as commission, whether you use a gift card or a credit card. But you've got to click that Amazon link first. Consider it a bonus gift to the Sunrise Morning Show. Again, when you go shopping, click the Amazon link prominently placed for your clicking convenience at the top of sunrisemorningshow.com.
He was a pope, a saint, and a doctor of the church.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
Pope St. Gregory I the Great is one of only four popes honored as the Great. Among his many achievements was sending missionaries across Northern Europe, especially St. Augustine of Canterbury, who brought Christ to the people of England. In a pun, Pope Gregory called the English people angels. He died in 604.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
14 minutes before the hour, here's Anna Mitchell with headlines.
A federal judge is denying a request to require the government to pay air traffic controllers who are working without pay during the government shutdown. The Archbishop of Baltimore, William Lurie, has outlined steps that the Archdiocese is taking to create more accountability among local church leadership. And the Northeast Province of the Society of Jesus yesterday released its list of Jesuits credibly accused of sexual abuse of a minor dating back to the 1950s. You can hear news at the top and bottom of each hour right here on the Sunrise Morning Show. And if you would like to continue listening on, we are a three-hour program and would love to have you along. You can download the Sunrise Morning Show app at sonrisemorningshow.com. That's also where you can access our podcasts via SoundCloud. Happy to welcome back to the Sunrise Morning Show, Kristen Hawkins of Students for Life of America. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And Students for Life of America's Institute for Pro-Life Advancement just recently released a new poll of millennials. Can you give us an overview? How did you conduct the poll and what were the big takeaways?
Sure. Well, we conducted the poll the first week of January, and we asked, you know, millennials, so 18 to 34-year-olds, key questions about their opinions on abortion, Roe versus Wade, Planned Parenthood. And, you know, the way I modeled the poll was I took a lot of the conversations that we have on campuses every day and the questions we're hearing. And we created questions to millennials because often when we see polls from Planned Parenthood on the other side, they'll say things like 7 in 10 Americans support Roe versus Wade. Well, that's true when they don't know what Roe versus Wade is.
Sure.
And so this poll, we actually told them what Roe versus Wade actually meant for our American society, that we have legalized abortion on 9 months of pregnancy. What we found, more than 51% of millennials opposed Roe versus Wade when they knew what Roe versus Wade actually did and created in our nation. In fact, at one point, the respondents were stopping the pollster saying, this can't be true. Surely moms can't choose abortion because they don't like the gender of the baby. And we said, no, this is actually true. We had more millennials, 48% of millennials supported giving their taxpayer dollars to federally qualified health centers, as opposed to 17 who wanted their tax dollars to go to Planned Parenthood. This was after educating them about what federally qualified health centers do and how they provide all the resources of Planned Parenthood minus abortion. We had more millennials than not say say that they wanted to see Roe versus Wade reversed. I mean, this is huge. Mm-hmm. These are huge numbers. We had 70%, more than 70% of millennials said that they favored restrictions on abortion, banning abortion when babies can feel pain, no taxpayer funding of abortion, common sense limits. Only 7% of millennials actually supported the Democratic National Committee's extremist platform on abortion, of abortion in all 9 months for whatever reason and taxpayer funded. Only 7%. So when you hear people in the news, when you hear pro-abortion legislators say that they're in touch, no, they are out of touch with the mainstream.
Well, you know, it's interesting listening to these main takeaways that you just listed off for us, and I want to get into to some of them a little more deeply here in a moment. But, Kristen, do you think a lot of these more pro-life viewpoints from millennials stems from the fact that they're actually getting truthful information about the realities of abortion?
Absolutely, because this is what happens on campuses all the time. We'll have students come up to us, and if you would ask them if they're pro-life or pro-choice, majority will say, "Well, I'm pro-choice." And we say, "Okay, did you know abortion means this? Did you know this is how abortion is committed? Did you know this is why you can have an abortion for any reason?" And they're always astounded. So it's very simple. You just have to educate people. You just have to educate them about what Roe versus Wade is, what Planned Parenthood's business model really is about. Because common sense, you know, people understand innately. I mean, this is because of the way we are created and whose image we were created in. We understand that killing that child, that precious little baby girl, baby boy in the womb, is wrong. We get that. That's why no one ever wants to say that they're pro-abortion on campuses, right? Everyone wants to say that they're pro-choice. Mm-hmm. No one actually wants to ever use that dreaded A word.
Well, you know what? I found it interesting in your press release on this that a lot of millennials don't like being labeled at all.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, we've been speaking to the pro leaders about this for several years now of, you know, we need to figure out our labels and what do we call ourselves, because they don't really like to be labeled. And, you know, we saw this in the poll. Even when you beat to ask them their political affiliation, the vast majority of those we polled said that they were independent. And we asked them, do you lean more Republican than independents? Do you lean more Democrat? And the majority said, no, I'm actually an independent. So this is good news for us. This means we can win this generation. We can be successful, but we're going to have to work at it. And I think we need to be very careful in how we're labeling things and what we're saying to millennials, because they're listening. They're paying attention.
And this issue does not have to be a liberal or conservative issue, does it?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I think that's, you know, the biggest obstacle we face is, you know, we have students all the time come up on campus and say, oh, well, I'm a Democrat, so I'm pro-choice. And I say, well, being a Democrat has nothing to do with you, your views on abortion. Can you just tell me what your actual views on abortion are? And we actually have to unpack that for them and make them decide for themselves to say, look, you can be whatever you want to be politically, but how do you feel about this issue? Because this is a moral issue. It's a human rights issue.
Well, Kristen, we have seen the predominance, I guess you could say, of using abortion-inducing drugs in abortion facilities, you know, prescribing them, even accessing them online to induce abortions early in pregnancy. What did millennials think about that?
Yeah, well, that was interesting, and that's something that I think, for, you know, when I look at the pro-life movement and our next battleground, I think this is going to be the key battleground for us, because we were, you know, there in California this year, and with a miracle, we were able to pull it off. And, you know, the legislation there, SB 324, was going to force all taxpayer-funded colleges to dispense RU 46 on campus, to become abortion facilities. And they've reintroduced it, and it's probably going to be passed and signed into law by the new governor there in California. And this is going to come for a state near you, right? It's not going to stay in California. So we actually asked students, how do you feel about RU 46? Do you think that it should be administered without a doctor being present? Do you think it should be mailed to students? And majority, vast majority said no, absolutely not. And so even if the students might disagree or people or Americans might disagree with your view of abortion, there's ways to talk to them about this issue, these medical abortions of surely don't you think a doctor should be involved here? This is a serious drug with serious ramifications. And what the abortion industry wants is they want abortion everywhere, right? They want abortion in our pharmacies. They want it to be mail to people. They just want abortion. They want to see the destruction of human beings. And we can't allow that to happen, but we can win. We can win even when you think that, you know, it's all lost. We can win, and there's always hope. And that's why we wanted to release these poll results this week, because in the midst of 46 years of Roe v. Wade, knowing the fact that we've lost 60 million little boys and little girls to abortion since 1973. While it looks like we're facing an uphill battle, we're not. We're winning. The tide has turned. But now we just have to be more dedicated than ever, because they know, the other side knows, and they're fighting back with everything that they have.
Well, Kristen, what is Students for Life of America? What have you been doing to get more facts out on college campuses specifically?
Sure. Well, we tour college campuses. So what's interesting about Students for Life, and I did the math the other day, I was like, this is crazy. You know, no other organization has more conversations about abortion than Students for Life, because we're there every day. We have 20 regional coordinators that every day are on at least 1 to 2 campuses working with our Students for Life groups. We have more than 1,200 groups across the country, and we're having conversations, one-on-one conversations. So we're there. This fall, we went to more than 115 campuses with our They Feel Pain tour, talking to students about fetal pain, educating them on the truth about late-term abortion. And it was unbelievable. The results were unbelievable. So we're going to continue doing our tours. We have a new tour launching. So everyone, I need your prayers.
Oh, absolutely. We've been talking to Kristen Hawkins. You certainly have our prayers and our gratitude for the work that you're doing with Students for Life of America. If listeners want to find this poll or check out more about the work you're doing, Kristen, where do they go?
You can go to studentsforlife.org, and to get just the poll results, go to instituteforprolifeadvancement.com.
All right, Kristen, and hopefully we can catch up on Friday as well when you're in D.C. for the March for Life. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you. God bless.
You too. Thank you. All right, that'll do it for the national edition of the Sunrise Morning Show. 2 more hours coming up for our locals and those of you listening on the app. May God bless you and keep you and grant you his peace.